University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
It's Martin Luther King Jr. holiday in the United States. I thought I'd take you through some of the chronology of Martin Luther's life. He was born, by the way, in 1929 on the 15th day to the Reverend and Mrs. Martin Luther King Sr. in Atlanta, Georgia. He graduated in 1944 from Booker T. Washington High School and was admitted to Morehouse College at age 15. He was ordained a Baptist minister February the 25th of 1948, just 19 years of age. In 1955, King received his doctorate in systematic theology from Boston University. That was on June 5th, and he joined a bus boycott after Rosa Parks was arrested on December the 1st. On December the 5th, he was elected president of the Montgomery Improvement Association, making him the official spokesperson for the boycott. On November the 13th of 1956, the Supreme Court ruled that bus segregation was illegal and ensured a victory for the boycott. And in 1957, King formed the Southern Christian Leadership Conference to fight segregation and achieve civil rights. On May 17th, Dr. King spoke to a crowd of about 15,000 in Washington, D.C. In 1958, the U.S. Congress passed the first Civil Rights Act since Reconstruction. And King's first book, Stride Toward Freedom, was published. On a speaking tour, Martin Luther King Jr. was nearly killed and was stabbed by an assailant in Harlem. In 1959, King visited India to study Mohandas Gandhi's philosophy of nonviolence, and he resigned from pastoring the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church to concentrate on civil rights full-time. He moved to Atlanta to direct the activities of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. In 1960, a year later, he became a co-pastor at his father's Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia. That same year, lunch counter sit-ins began in Greensboro, North Carolina. In Atlanta, King was arrested during a sit-in, waiting to be served at a restaurant. He was sentenced to 4 months in jail, but after intervention by John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy, he was released. In 1963, on Good Friday, April the 12th, King was arrested by Police Commissioner Eugene Bull Connor for demonstrating without a permit. On the 13th, the Birmingham campaign was launched, and it would prove to be the turning point in the war to end segregation in the South. During the 11 days he spent in jail, Martin Luther King wrote his famous Letter from Birmingham Jail. On June 23rd of 1963, Martin Luther King led 125,000 people on a freedom walk in Detroit. The March on Washington was held August the 28th and remains the largest civil rights demonstration in history with more than 200,000 people in attendance. At the march, King made his famous I Have a Dream speech. November the 22nd that year, President Kennedy was assassinated. January the 3rd of 1964, King appeared on the cover of Time magazine as its Man of the Year. By the way, after President Lyndon Baines Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act into law, Martin Luther King Jr. turned to socioeconomic problems. In 1968, he delivered the I've Been to a Mountaintop speech, and at sunset on April the 4th, Martin Luther King Jr. was fatally shot while standing on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. Today is MLK Day. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The markets are closed in observance of the Martin Luther King holiday. We bring you this encore edition of Commodity Week. Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Brian Stark of the Andersons, Dale Durkles of Grain Cycles, and Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. Now, let's begin our conversation. We'll start with Brian Stark from the Andersons. Thank you, Brian, for being with us. Can you give me your early assessment of the numbers USDA released Thursday?
I think the biggest thing, Todd, that caught the trade by surprise was the 1.6 million acreage cut in harvested acres for corn. It took production down 200 million, which then allowed the government, we know we've been slow on export demand. Most of us in the industry thought we might see slower cuts on some of the corn demand side, maybe 75 to a possibly 100 million slash. They were able to, obviously, with the drop in production that was unexpected, slash export demand 150 million. I think now, once they've done that, we have some work to do with the balance sheet still declining, even with all those changes, because of the surprise and cut in acreage. We're still lower 15 million month over month, and obviously a very tight scenario that the market has to be aware of as we start to hone in and focus on acreage going forward in the spring. From that perspective,
from your view here in East Central Illinois of demand, of consumption, can you start with feed, move through exports, and then we probably really need to talk about the ethanol and the number USDA didn't change?
Yeah, I think from a feed perspective, it feels like, you know, the stocks number was mostly in line with what people were saying. And I think as you go forward, you know, animal numbers continue to be fairly stable. So I'm not expecting a lot of change, but when you see changes in production, the government tends to adjust feed usage based on how small or big the crop is. So, you know, a 25 million cut in feed may or may not be unwarranted yesterday when we were looking at things. And I think because they did that, we haven't really adjusted on the ethanol side. And we know here recently driving demand is below same time last year. Margins are a little bit tight for the ethanol perspective today. So it felt like we might see a cut in ethanol demand simply based on what we're seeing from a gasoline demand usage standpoint. I still think that that could come here down the road. And then as I highlighted earlier, on the export side, the other component, you've already slashed. I think the current pace the government was seeing before the numbers came out, we were running about 300 million behind pace. They were able to obviously adjust 50% of that. And with things going, you know, a little bit of a struggle down in Argentina on the corn and bean crop, it's hard to imagine how much more we're going to be able to see cut as we move forward. So to me, there's not a lot of demand factors where we currently are today with a price perspective that's going to make it easy to slash moving forward. So all the more purpose of focusing on needing acreage to be in that 91 and 92 million here this coming spring.
Yeah, so really this sets the balance sheet up as balanced, in your opinion, and correct?
Yeah, I would say so today. I mean, the only adjustments I could see coming down is ethanol here. If driving demand continues to be sluggish as we head towards spring, maybe you cut it another 50 to 75 million. Otherwise, you're in line. But with what we had expected coming in, that maybe the carryout with that slow corn export demand would grow to 1.4, 1.5. You know, maybe at the top end, we're in the 1.3 to 1.4 area, which is still fairly tight and puts a lot of pressure to produce another big crop here in the summer and fall of 23.
So given, and we can talk about the soybean numbers in just a second, but given the soybean figures that were released, the corn numbers appear supportive to sideways on their own. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Yeah. No, I think that's true. I think it's corn, obviously, with the way the demand factors have led in, we've obviously not seen ourselves competitive on the world stage, but we normally see our corn demand pick up, you know, Feb, March forward as South America switches over to an export bean program. So it'll be interesting to see, given our price competitiveness, if we see any more cuts. But I do think the market is sideways to slightly higher as we head into spring for corn. And then we can switch over and focus on the bean side, which, you know, cutting export demand 55 million bushels yesterday was also another surprise on that end, just given the expectation that Argentina's bean crop is estimated by some of the services down there to be sub 40 million metric ton. So I think that was a surprise to the trade. We may see something down the road of a sub 200 million carryout on soybeans.
That would be a low carryout and would set up, I suppose, that need for an acreage battle, but might not come until after the February crop setting dates.
I would agree with that. I think now it's kind of a reset. And then as you get closer towards the outlook form at the end of February, leading up into the first survey, March 1st, for the acreage intentions. But yeah, I think the next 60 to 90 days, there's going to be a pull and tug between corn and beans on how we balance the acreage that we're going to intend to plant this spring.
Up until this point, farmers have been strongholders, and apparently rightfully so, of corn. Should they remain that way?
I think from a future standpoint, yes. I think what we've seen from a cash grain perspective, in, even starting back last month in December, grain movement has been very good. I think one of the things that we've tried to point out from a risk management perspective is the higher interest rates and the cost of interest in the component of carry. There's not a lot of carry on the board for corn and beans. And so any type of bushel you're holding on farm, you have to earn in the cash carry through the basis. The higher the futures go, the best movement that we've seen the last couple months kind of leads pressure on basis. And I think the board will present some opportunities, but I think scale selling into rallies is still the appropriate thing to do on corn and soybeans, especially if a grower can get $15 cash for soybeans, given some of the yields in this area. That's really good revenue. On the corn side, I think there's probably a chance we see a $7 board price at some point again. But again, it could be 3 months down the road as we talk about acres and what else we need to do to ration. So I think the risk of carrying with a lack of carry in the market presents a challenge. So I've been encouraging growers to at least take advantage of strong basis when it happens, and move grain. Right now in the spot, we're seeing some of that happen already because basis has come under pressure. And obviously the higher the board goes, the less work the basis has to do to generate movement.
Did the calculus for new crop corn and soybean sales change yesterday?
I don't think so. In my perspective, because I think both balance sheets are fairly tight. And I think ultimately the grower has to figure out his input costs, look at what he expects to generate. And I think that's the telltale sign of what everyone needs to see to increase or balance their acreage mix. I still am of the belief that sub $6 DEIS 23 corn does not get the 92 million acres that we probably need to see planted this spring.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time with me.
Yep. Thanks, Todd.
Brian Stark is from the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Dale Durkles, let's turn to you now from Grain Cycles. I'd like you to take us through the winter wheat seedings report. I don't look at it very closely. In fact, I haven't looked at it at all as we're talking on Thursday. Can you tell me about those numbers?
You know, most people probably didn't pay much attention to it, but probably one of the more interesting set of data points that came out of the USDA with the January reports. The total winter wheat seedings were 36.95 million acres. That was the largest winter wheat seeding going back to 2015. You know, you start talking about a long ways back, and then when you start breaking it down and start looking at some of the individuals, you really see that it's even bigger than that. The hard red winter, 25.3 million, is the biggest since 2014. And the soft red, 7.9 million acres, goes all the way back to 2013, I think it is. So, you know, we had the largest winter wheat seeding numbers by far in a long time.
What does that tell you either about prospective plantings for corn and soybeans, or maybe more importantly for me at the moment, where this marketplace is for wheat, and then we'll work that into the rest of them?
Well, I don't know that it tells me anything about corn and soybean plantings because, you know, if you're planting more wheat, you know, then you basically start going, okay, where is other acreage going to give at this point in time? Maybe the soft red wheat number there, 7.8 9 million acres, the intentions being the biggest going back to 2011 or 2012, I think it is. Now, maybe that one's telling us a story because of the changes that were made with one of the pieces of legislation this last year that affects crop insurance, because we opened up to people, producers in more northerly areas, and when I speak northerly, not way north, but even up into northern Illinois, that could potentially plant double crop beans and qualify for insurance coverage on those double crop beans, even though they had never had a double crop before. And I wonder if that didn't have some impact on some of the soft red plantings. The hard red plantings being up, I think that was just producers going, you know, my crop insurance guarantees look good. Yeah, the weather conditions look awful. Let's go put the seed in. We won't put any fertilizer down or very much fertilizer down. And we'll just play a game of hold and hope. If it doesn't work out, I'll rip it up and plant it to something else in the spring. But they were trying to look to take advantage of that crop insurance coverage, I think.
Can you give me a sense of where these are, wheat that is, in your cycle analysis?
Well, it was interesting. I put out a piece back in the middle part of December, and you know, we had that hard, vicious collapse in there, and we got nearby futures right down against the $7 mark. New July was down at 740, which when you look at a continuous July contract, that was a critical support point or a retracement support point. We're coming back and retesting those with the break we've had here over the last week now. But going back into that period, you know, you look at the action, you look at the timing, you look at everything, and it said, you know, this could be setting up for a pretty important bottom. Wheat normally has a seasonal pattern, so you don't tend to look at other shorter-term cycles a whole lot, but every once in a while, a 40-week will pop out, and it was timed perfectly for a 40-week low. Last year, we had a six-year low in the wheat, but the thing that worries me when I start looking forward is that next summer, and I'm kind of leaning towards late summer, we might find a nine-year low come in the wheat market. So whatever strength we get here in the winter months out of this wheat, I'm real nervous that we open the door for renewed weakness out in there, which would argue at this point anyway, we got a good crop that could happen in 23.
And does that cycle, then, that good crop for wheat, if it comes to fruition, the cycle low that you're thinking maybe comes in August, does it pair up with any other cycles, whether they're for soybeans or corn? Usually they come, I think, after wheat sometimes, but maybe there's a different timing that you can talk about.
Well, when you look at these long-term cycles, corn tends to be dominated by a couple of 24 to 26 month lows, seems to work through the corn market. And the other one there that you really look at in corn is a 5.5 year, and the 5.5 year actually bottomed in 2020, so it's a ways off too. The only other one that really comes close is that it looks to me like when you get into late spring, maybe even into very early summer, we got a 3 year low in beans due. So, you know, that may be playing into the mix. In a broader sense, I look at commodity indices, and maybe even crude oil as well, having a 3 year low due out here towards the end of spring, beginning of summer. So maybe the wheat's going to be in part tied to that somehow.
USDA made changes, some significant changes, in both the corn and soybean supply and demand sheets today. However, the bottom lines didn't change very much. I think down 15 million for corn for ending stocks for the old crop, and down 10 million for soybeans. So not a big change on the bottom line, but there was a lot of finagling. What did you make of those numbers through the day?
Well, I think the bean numbers are probably the more interesting of the two when you look at corn and beans themselves. Some people are already talking a little bit about we didn't have much of a change. It was a very minor change in area planted of corn, but we had a big decline in area harvested. And I actually looked at the percent abandoned above and beyond what we cut for silage. And I just went, that seems a little large. So I'm kind of curious as if that acreage number on corn will hold up through time, but that's immaterial. They cut the export number by another 150 million bushel, you know, and we've taken over 200 million off of that on corn at this time now with the last couple of reports. And that's owing to the fact that corn export demand is being soft. But I tell people, though, when you look at corn export demand and looking ahead at this game, you know, the U.S. corn export program is going to be moving into a period where it ought to get stronger. We're behind, you know, some of the bigger pushes out of Ukraine, and you know, Brazil has been exporting old crop and even a little bit of new crop, first crop corn, but that isn't going to be big. So the world, if they want corn, is going to have to be looking to the U.S. because the next big supply of corn that's going to come into the pipeline when you look forward really is Brazil, and that isn't until very late June and generally on into July. So I think corn export demand will pick up, but we're so far behind where we need to be at this time. I think it was owing that they broke it or reduced it as much as they did, but I don't think there's a lot more to really take it down. So I think we're pretty much at a bottom line there. Beans, I think the change in the export number in beans was just a response of, you know, we don't want to take our carryout number below 210, and where are we going to put it? So it had to come out of the bean export realistically. And I think generally when I look at a good crop coming out of Brazil, and there is going to be a good crop coming out of Brazil, I think our exports in beans are probably going to really start to dry up pretty rapidly now.
Would you characterize today's reports for each of the crops as bullish, neutral, or bearish?
Oh, boy. I would say they weren't bearish. The wheat, maybe you could say the acreage is a little bearish, but I think a lot of people are going to take a pass on that because they do have a history of changing somewhat as you look forward anyway. And I think still the concern about the poor condition of the winter crop out in the plains in particular is going to keep people from pressing that too much. The corn overall, even though, you know, you can say we didn't reduce the carryout much, or the beans, we didn't reduce the carryout much, the internals, it looks like they were forced to make some of those changes to keep those carryouts from going down. So I think people are going to characterize them a little bit more as being somewhat positive, but I don't see anything really as being wildly bullish at all.
Any advice for producers as they think about old or new crop sales for corn and beans?
Well, you know, the way I look at things, and this has been something I've been thinking about going back into December, you know, when it looked like the corn put in a low back in early December, the beans looked to be back then even like they could strengthen a little bit, and then we had that wheat play. I'd been looking ahead for a point as we get on into midwinter, maybe a little bit deeper. I think early March is the latest we can play to make some sales. Right now, you know, old crop, I'm targeting something up around 1560, 1570 on March futures to make some sales. Beans, or on corn, I look at March futures getting up somewhere 685, 690-ish to really be making some sales again. And the minute I start making old crop sales, I'm going to be making new crop sales. I do not want to hold things into spring this year.
That's Dale Durkles. He's with Grain Cycles. Joined us on our Commodity Week program along with Brian Stark of the Andersons and Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities. You've been listening to an encore edition to that program. It's up online now at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.